Hey, everybody, welcome to Five Rounds today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. We are discussing everything that is going on in the landscape of mixed martial arts. We got a little Bellator action happening, got some UFC action happening. Last night, Sunday night in Canada, it's when I get to decompress and just chill out and see what's on the tube. And, of course, my default is on Fight Network. And if you're fortunate enough, we have the rights to the UFC here in Canada, and it was UFC 52 main event to the rematch between Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell. Also on the card, Travis Luter and Matt Lindland. And man, Matt Lindland, once he locked in that guillotine choke, he was trying to rip the throat out of Travis Luter.
He's mean.
He is mean. And also on the card, George St. Pierre, who they said it was 7-1, but we figured it out. He was 8-1 as he was fighting Mayhem Miller. And I know I've got the TriStar shirt on.
You're a mark.
But the reality is, I'm actually not a big George St. Pierre mark because George St. Pierre changed. If you look at the way he used to fight, he would take a lot of risks and he'd do a lot of fun things. But then he had to tailor his style to, all right, if we want to make money, if we want to stay on the top of the mountain, we have to focus on winning first. And his coaches will all say, winning by taking as little damage as humanly possible. I mean, that wasn't the case because if you look at his career, as I mentioned, we were watching that fight with Mayhem Miller, 8-1. The guy retired with 25-2 record, and most of his fights, for the exception of six, all fought in the UFC.
Yeah, that's absolutely crazy. And when you look at that, there are guys that are getting close to Aldo's 29. Aldo's 29.
It seems like he's 35.
Exactly. And because guys like Aldo, George St. Pierre, Anderson Silva, although he's late 30s at least, they fought so much. They fought so hard. They fought at such high levels when they're young. They just seem to age. Nobody more than your guy, Big Knock.
Minotauro.
You know, there was times where you'd be like, Minotauro, you know, what's he, like 39? And be like, actually, he's 31. Like, on his way up. He always seemed so much older. And the amount that these guys put out, we looked at it. George was 7-0. I think he had one win, maybe two in the UFC when they said, you're popular. Why don't you fight Matt Hughes for the title? I mean, doing that with seven fights, it's crazy the level that these guys fought at in those formative years, and they don't seem like that long ago. But you know, to see how much George fought, to see even guys like Ben Henderson, guys fight a lot, and this isn't football.
Josh Koscheck was one of those examples of a guy that tried to max it out. It's like, okay, I've got this popularity because of this reality show. The only way I'm going to be able to drive a Ferrari is if I fight five and six times a year.
Yeah. And it's one of those things we forget. And sometimes when people are looking, you know, I just got back from vacation and I was in Orlando at Universal Studios.
That's awesome.
And man, the density of entertainment that we need as people right now, the heavy density, you know, you're in lineup for Harry Potter and there's a dragon breathing up here and there's music playing everywhere and you got a wand that does stuff on a crazy ride. We require that level of entertainment. And sometimes when we don't always see it, we don't realize that in one of these fights, people are like, oh, yeah, that fight was fine. That's affected that kid's life.
Yeah,
you know, these guys, when they fight this much, it's really tough on them. It's a beautiful, brilliant sport. It really is. But it is demanding on these guys. You look at a fight coming up like Weidman versus Rockhold. One of them is going to win that fight and move forward, but that fight is going to take something out of both of them.
Out of both of them. Say, sure, somebody's going to win that fight. Somebody's going to lose that fight, but they're both going to be injured coming out of the fight. I think I talked to you before. I had the great pleasure of calling a K-1 show in Thailand, and Bull Cow fought on because that whole thing where he left before the last round. But Andre Dida also fought on that card. And Dida won. He was throwing flying knees and this and that. He won. He got off of that bus limping like somebody just destroyed him. And that was the winner.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those things. Michael Bisping, when you see that guy's face, that eye doesn't lie to you. It tells you what he's been through. And
he used to look in the mirror every day.
Yeah. And now that mirror can be surrounded with diamonds because he's made some good money.
Right.
And that is a trade that they make, you know. But it is a demanding sport. And nobody loves fighting more than we do. But when we get to those shows, when we get to call small shows, you're excited, man. You see the fighters and they're excited and you can feel the energy. There's always that moment where they wheel that 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 gurney in, and they bring in the ambulance and they wheel the gurney out of it. And every time, no matter what I'm thinking, it reminds me of what those guys are doing in there. I don't know why we started with this conversation, to be honest. I mean, other than marveling at what these guys have done. But it's nice to remind ourselves of what we're watching. Not only is it entertainment and technical brilliance, but people are making sacrifices for entertainment.
I know.
When I was in Orlando, nobody died making those. Nobody lost the ability to move and play with their children at 50 making those those Harry Potter rides that I enjoyed. But Michael Bisping's eye will always be affected, and we enjoy those.
Well, I was talking about the fact that we had the chance to air the UFC on Sunday nights, and Chuck Liddell ran.
Cool.
It is cool. But you talked about this huge fight card that's coming up between Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo and Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold and Yoel Romero and Jacare on that card. This was the card last night, UFC 52, kind of like that. You have Chuck and Randy, who were the biggest stars in the sport at the time. The co-featured bout, one of the greatest fights in UFC history, just inducted into the Hall of Fame, Matt Hughes and Frank Trigg.
Amazing.
That crazy matchup. Travis Luter, who would go on to face Anderson Silva for the middleweight championship. He won the Ultimate Fighter, failed to make weight. And then he fought Matt Lindland, who's one of these characters that, just came to mixed martial arts or helped build mixed martial arts in a time where you couldn't make a whole lot of money. If Matt Lindland was in his prime today, he'd be a force. I think that this is a guy that really could make money because he's smug.
Yeah.
He's got that. The Americans would love him because he's got that Greco background. He's a silver medalist at the, Olympics was it? Sydney Olympics, I think, in Greco-Roman wrestling. Pioneered the team with Randy Couture and Dan Henderson and Chael Sonnen, Team Quest.
He's a hardcore Chael Sonnen Republican with extreme opinions. And I'm a liberal Canadian, and I think he's really cool.
You know what I mean? Crazy.
Like, I really do. But
and then George St. Pierre versus Mayhem Miller. Yeah. So when you have a card stacked like that, I think that's what has built the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of fans out there that watch the cards right now, and they're like, this just isn't the same because it's just Joe Blow versus Joe Blow opposed to looking at the future. And I know back they only held X amount of shows back then, where the UFC is almost running shows every week, if not every other week, but it's closer to every week and or a couple of times a month.
Three times
a month. So I understand because of that, you're not going to have the level of talent throughout your entire roster.
But when you can have a card like a guy who's excited everybody's imagination, like Conor McGregor, fighting the best featherweight of all time, and Jose Aldo, at a time where we believe possibly the young, getting better, mentally unstoppable guy that's been on a roll is facing the champion at a point that maybe his body can't take it anymore. You know, and
what if his body can take it? We'll get into that later. We'll get into that discussion.
And then
later.
On the same one, you have two of the best fights in 185 pound history.
Maybe
and
the
a
best
moment
fight ever.
In time in the 185 pound class that not only has the middleweight division never looked this good, but I don't know since Chuck and Randy and Tito and the 205 pound division in that golden age. Yeah. I don't know if there's ever been a division this good in fighting in the top five. I don't know if there ever has been.
Well, what's great about it is, you know, the landscape has kind of changed. You think about the way MMA was 2 years ago, and there was a number one dog in the sport being the UFC, the top promotion organization on the planet. And then it's like, well, we're not really sure who's number two. The rest of these guys, you're kind of the same, you know, because KSW in Poland is maybe bigger than the UFC, which what they are bigger
in
than
their
the, in their country.
Yeah.
I don't know, EFC Africa.
Yeah.
Are they as big in...
Is there much UFC in Africa?
Exactly. Yeah. So when you look at those things, it's like, it's hard to tell. One FC is doing their thing.
In Asia.
Now we're starting to see somebody emerge, and that's the Bellator organization. Since Scott Coker has come on, they've raved about his leadership, and he's starting to do some cool things to try to pique the interest of the hardcore fans and the casual fans. And one of the things that he's doing, it's happening this coming, I thought it was Friday, but it's happening Saturday. And our boy Dave is having a viewing party for this Bellator show. And you said you couldn't imagine a couple of years ago people saying, you know what? What we're doing on Saturday night, we're all sitting down to watch Bellator.
Yeah, West Coast Dave, I like to watch fights. He's an old friend. And my friends Jen and John, we all get together and watch fights. And I work
specifically the UFC.
We watch the UFC. And Dave just sent me a note. Dave watches the show all the time. and he knows a lot about marijuana. And they... He does. And he sent me a message saying, hey, you want to come over on Saturday night and watch Bellator? First of all, he knew it was Saturday night.
I know.
And we thought it was Friday night. And secondly, I don't think I would have thought of a time where my friends, even the ones that are really into fighting, would have thrown a party for a Bellator show.
When you look at this card, though, it's kind of a throwback because we mentioned Chuck and Randy headlining UFC 52.
Yeah.
Well, this is a throwback because Tito Ortiz is headlining this show against the current champion, a guy that we all believe is very, very good, and Liam McGarry. We just haven't seen enough of him because most of his fights end in the first round. And it's like we've seen how those guys, what happens to those guys when they get into the third and fourth round. Well, he went five rounds with Emmanuel Newton and ended up beating Emmanuel Newton.
Yeah.
So the guy is legit.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And this is the one thing that Bellator and Scott Coker, they've been doing. Let's build our own stars. Yeah, it's great to have Tito Ortiz, but wouldn't it be good if we had a guy that beat Tito Ortiz and people saw him beat Tito Ortiz and that legitimizes him? Again, I don't know if it does.
Or if Tito wins, then
exactly.
The old hero wins. So from a matchmaking standpoint, from a promoter standpoint, it's great. McGarry represents, you know, the sport changes. What is being taught by the masters changes. What is being taught by the best coaches? The way it's being analyzed and looked at and picked apart. Things that worked 6 weeks ago don't necessarily work right now. So you got a kid like McGarry who is able to beat improvisational fighters like we saw in his last fight, and now he's facing an older fighter. Can, you know, from my standpoint, as much as I love McGarry and I love the new age of fighters, and that's what I'm most interested in, can an old school guy with a tough mentality and badass wrestling, who's elbowed through a ton of guys' guards, ton of guys' hands while he's sat in their guard, can he do that against a young, highly developed guy? That's a really valid question for me as a serious fight fan. Not just like, wow, I remember Tito's name.
Yeah.
I really want to know if that's possible. If it's possible, is Tito Ortiz the guy to do it? I want to know that.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and discuss this Bellator Dynamite card, including the main event, Tito Ortiz, Liam McGarry, for the 205-pound championship. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you. We're discussing the Bellator Dynamite card, which goes down this Saturday. Not Friday. I know people are confused. Bellator, I was confused too. Happens this Saturday in San Jose, California. The main event, Liam McGarry taking on Tito Ortiz. And the problem with Tito Ortiz, yes, he's a name, but he's gone through a plethora of injuries. And you would imagine that is due to whatever performance enhancers that he's taken throughout his career, the roughness of the sport, not training intelligently, sparring too much. Liam McGarry only has 10 fights. So you'd imagine he would be the guy that has the least amount of miles and spent time training at AKA in San Jose, California. And now trains out of in New Jersey with the Henzo Gracie team and Frankie Edgar's people. And I know Mark Henry's not his boxing coach. So this is a guy that's taking this very, very seriously. It's not as if he's a spring chicken. He's 32 years of age. So now is the time for him to kind of be a star.
He's young in his fight time, but he's in his 30s. Now, first thought I want to have is you mentioned back any possible performance enhancers Tito has done.
Yeah.
Now, he has never failed a drug test, and he would tell you right out, I don't do those things.
Yeah.
We prescribe, belong to a group of people who acknowledge that was a pretty standard reality of a certain amount of the time that veterans like this participated in fighting. Now, they didn't all take something, but they sure as heck mostly did a bit, were exposed to it. It was a part of
that culture.
Developmental culture. It was. And I think it's okay to talk about that. I think it's okay to acknowledge it. It's not okay to –
we're not pointing the finger.
He may have. Why can you even say that? Because if you do talk to 50 guys from that era, they'll say most guys did. Some will say I had to. Some will say I thought all my opponents did it. Just the same way you talk about cyclists in that one era. It was part of the culture. Was there some guys who were drug-free in that culture? There were. Were some of them able to go really far? They were.
Yeah.
But the culture, part of that era. So when you reference that era, you're like, hey, man, some of the drugs you might have had to do in that era, some of the drugs you chose to do because that was part of the culture, or some of the drugs drugs you felt compelled to do. Any of those things that were there have taken the years and put the miles on these guys. You know, again, we're referencing your shirt.
Yeah.
Coach Frost.
Yeah,
well,
happy, yeah.
we spent some time with Frost in Saskatoon, and he is very anti-drugs. Always yeah. has been. But his main reason, when he talks to his guys, he's like, look, if these were healthy for you, yeah. I wouldn't be so opposed
I would
to
say
them.
Do them.
Yeah. He's like, but they are harmful to your life.
And the long term.
Yes. And to your life, your future. And him and many coaches, most really top coaches mentally, the goal is to make you win and successful and an entertainer and rich and minimize the amount of damage mm-hmm. that your body takes from getting hit, you know, overtraining, cutting weight, and cutting out those drugs is a big part of it. And so today, we've never been in probably what's about to be the cleanest era in fighting.
Yep.
There will be guys who are able to cheat. They'll be the rich guys
yeah.
or guys who will sacrifice everything to get an advantage, but it won't be cheap because if you're going to trick these guys who are the elite of the elite in catching drug yeah. users that the UFC is proud to have hired,
it's going
to
cost you a lot of cash. That's the reality.
Yeah.
And we got to continue to talk about this Bellator
sure.
card. You know, like, as I mentioned, going mm-hmm. down in San Jose, California, only fitting that Josh Thompson is a part of this card. Left the UFC, has that relationship with Scott Coker. Coker promoted him when he was in Strikeforce, taking on Mike Bronzulis, who was a part of the Fight Masters. That was that show on the Bellator, the one that Joe Riggs.
Yeah, I think it was called Fight Master.
Anyway.
Not a compelling name.
Yeah, sure.
Not a compelling
show. That was the Bjorn Rebney time.
Yeah,
I don't know if Scott Coker would do that type of thing.
If you watch now, there'll be a show using the exact same layout and strategy.
Yeah.
Of tattoos.
Yeah.
And it's
course.
Like, and it's actually not a bad show.
Yeah.
I've watched that one. It's kind of
Is
funny.
That the Dave Navarro
yeah,
show?
Yeah. He's not the best part
yeah,
of it.
Whatever.
No offense. Yeah. And Dave Navarro's not watching.
Stick playing guitar.
Yeah.
You know, he's good at that.
It's actually kind of a formulaic reality show. And I think.
Those stink.
Yeah, they really do. Over time, I mean, as consumers of television, sometimes we feel comfortable seeing the same thing all the time. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like, hey, this guy just won. What's next for him?
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like.
We don't want to see that. Though.
No, but some people do. But Fight Master just didn't take.
Yeah.
It just didn't take. And, but yeah, your point was he was on that show. Yeah.
And when you look, so Josh Thompson. And taking on Mike Bronzulis, it's kind of tailor-made for these two to light it up and showcase, you know, two fighters fighting, not worrying about the win. Because I think Coker has a different mentality of just go put on a show where this is entertainment for people. Go and fight your asses off and you'll be rewarded. Also on the card, Paul Daly, because this is the reason why it's dynamite, because you get to see some MMA and you get to see some kickboxing.
Yeah.
Paul Daly in a kickboxing match, as well as, I don't know if you're familiar with this name, Carrie-Anne Taylor Melendez competing on the show, the wife of Gilbert Melendez.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think is so cool, and I think it's one of the reasons why Gilbert has had success, is that I think most people's better half can't understand what they go through. I'm sure your wife had no clue that you had to be selfish while you're getting ready to go into the cage because the objective of the other guy is to break your f-ing head
it's
open.
It's true. And
so
when you
think about Carrie's role, that she's like, I know what this guy's gone through, so I'm going to give him a space. I'm going to do all the things that I need to do to make this camp as easy for him as humanly possible.
And let's take it a step further. Whoever she's fighting doesn't have a husband and a partner behind her like she does, like Carrie does, who has a partner who not only has been through it himself, he can give insight, he's been through it at an even higher level. So she's a very talented fighter, and right now he's off, speaking of failing drug tests.
Yeah.
You know, he comes from an era, now him and the Diaz brothers in that era were notoriously clean athletes in the rumor department. But at different times in your life, you face different challenges, different temptations, different realities
of
culture.
He's got kids now, so that
could
change your motivation.
Who knows, but he failed.
Yeah.
And that's not good today, man. It's a different thing. We're looking at old pancreas, which we get to commentate here.
Yeah.
And we're like, holy shit, look at this guy.
I told you I watched UFC 52, and you see these guys stand on the scale at the weigh-in, and you know there's something in their body.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird and unknown period, and I mean, who the hell are we to judge? When we look at you look at the era through to today. Now everybody has seen how this television show goes, and they've seen how to train, and they know the coaches to train. People have seen thousands of fights, and it's just not, doesn't have this. Although the level is scarier, the unknown isn't there. And if the unknown was there, and you don't know what this guy does, has done, you'd have to assume that he's done everything. And if guys in your gym are using steroids, and your opponent might be, I mean, it's a different time. But yeah, to your point, Cary Melendez will look good because nobody's going to have somebody as strong behind them. And it's a very interesting point. I don't know if people really see this, but the 6, 8, 10, whatever weeks out from a fight, it is a type of selfish that it's a self-preservation It's like, I cannot go to your birthday party because someone's trying to kill me in 3 weeks. Yeah. And I have to train or sleep or whatever. And
But that's where I think people, they blur the line. It's like, well, you're involved in a sport. Oh, you can't miss your sport. It's like, well, my sport isn't throwing a ball.
Yeah.
My sport is somebody is trying to put their shin across my temple.
And that takes us back to what we talked about earlier. When you're looking at this, it doesn't hurt if you're a big fight fan and to remember it and remind your friends at a party. When you see something and a guy gets knocked out or something happens, he's doing that specifically for money and glory and all the testing of his skills, but he's also doing that for entertainment. And it hurts.
Yeah.
It's damaging. They're damaging their bodies for us. You know, Britney Spears, well, she probably damaged her body too.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we might talk more about Britney Spears.
We also got to talk
about some of the other things happening at that Bellator Dynamite event happening in San Jose. Don't change the channel. More of Five Rounds Today when we come back. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today, the SAP Center in San Jose, California.
Bob SAP?
Not the Bob SAP Center. However, I was watching also The Longest Yard last night, flipping back and forth. Stone Cold, Steve Austin on that in that movie, Kevin Nash in that movie, and Bob Sapp is in that movie, too.
He's also in a very famous scale.
Sapp Alvarez scale. Speaking of Alvarez, he's got the date with Anthony Pettis.
Ooh, yeah.
How awesome is that? Anyways, we'll talk about that later, because there is a whole shitload of awesome fights coming up. But we got to finish talking about this Bellator Dynamite card. Half MMA, half kickboxing. Paul Daly on the show in his fighting kickboxing. Carrie Ann Melendez, the wife of Gilbert Melendez, fighting on the card. We have Tito Ortiz, Liam McGarry, mixed martial arts contest for the 205-pound championship. Josh Thompson on the card, as well as a tournament for the number one contender of the 205-pound division.
I forgot, actually, that was on there.
How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Emmanuel Newton, Phil Davis, King Mo Lawal, and Linton Vassell, and there's a reserve bout, Francis Carmont as well. Now, have you heard about the rules?
No.
So the first round is two rounds, and if after two rounds it is deemed a draw, that the Bellator people, in conjunction with the commission people, will determine who moves on based on their performances. That's on your record. It's a draw for you, and it's a draw for me. But for these tournament purposes, we have to pick a winner to move on.
I didn't know that. I've been on vacation.
Yeah.
And as much as I promised my wife I will stay out of the world of fighting, it's still really hard to do. And every time I'm near a bar with somebody, I want to talk about fighting, and it's I didn't hear this. My first instinct is I do not really like that.
Okay.
I get it, but I mean,
well, it's a draw. A draw's a draw.
Yeah,
like, well, who gets to go? Do you flip
a
coin?
Who gets to go? And the answer is, these days, the guy who put on the better show, the guy who is more exciting. You can choose
the guy
who's less injured.
It.
Yeah, but that's the same thing.
Okay, if you're coming after me and you are trying to knock me out, you're constantly pursuing the finish, so to speak. And that first round is a 10-9 round for you. Whereas I tried to do my best, but you were the aggressor.
Yeah.
In round two, I don't want that. I pull a Phil Davis.
Yeah.
Sorry, Phil, but this is the reality. And I hold you down. and I am not trying to finish the fight. You get the. You should be the guy that moves on.
I don't know about that. That means, why is that better? The ability to stop you from doing what you, I know that people will disagree with
because
me,
it's
and
about
I know
aggression.
That I'm a purist. I don't think it is about aggression. I think Gegard Mousasi could perform jab surgery on your eye. Looking all casual.
Yeah, that's true.
All night. Well, you're trying. I mean, remember when he fought...
Munoz.
No, with the guy who filled in on short notice.
Acosta Filippo's fight. Which fight?
No, the guy... It was supposed to be...
Ilir Latifi.
Yeah. Latifi was going after
him. Yeah.
And Mousasi just busted him up from the outside. Mousasi was the masterful fighter.
Yeah, I agree.
But even if you want desperately to smash me up and I grind you on the ground, I know that's not as entertaining. That's a whole other conversation. It's an ongoing conversation that we have for a lot of reasons, and they're not all as judgmental as sometimes even we feel when we say them.
Yeah.
But this is about perfection. It's about I know that entertainment is a factor of what you do when you fight, but it's also you want to go in there and master the martial arts and master another human being, and there are a lot of ways to do that don't involve aggression.
I guess aggression is the wrong word because I'm meaning not you just coming out blasting me, but I mean you're systematically beating me down where you're the one moving forward and I'm retreating. I'm trying to counter you, but you're lighting me up. You're attacking me to my body.
And you win a round like that.
You win that round.
But
and in round two, I manage the takedown. You defend my submission attempts or my where I'm trying to advance my position. You shut that down underneath, but I'm still the guy on top. Yeah. After those two rounds, you have to look at the guy that has been. Do you know what I mean?
I know I see it. I definitely see it. But there's different ways to systematically break you down. One is physical damage.
Yeah, yeah.
The other one maybe just exhaustion and mental exhaustion. Mm-hmm. And Phil Davis will do that to you. And Phil Davis will mentally deplete you the same way that another guy will smash your legs in or beat you up, physically dominate you. And that's real.
But what happens if this is a no time limit matchup?
Phil Davis will win that one.
Yeah.
He'll grind you. If there's no time limit and no ends of the rounds, when Phil Davis gets on top and you're never getting up, you've been there in the gym.
Either
someone's on you and you just can't get them up, or you're on them.
Yeah.
You know.
But like, what about the guys? He's just
in the back room in the editing suite.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's got to happen.
And
you physically dominate a person, and they go, well, you want 3 more minutes of this?
Yeah.
11, 20, 30?
But there are times where you're in a position where you're on your back and the guy that's on top of you is just better than you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, my energy level is still high.
Yeah.
You give me an opportunity, I'm getting back up.
Yeah.
And if I get back up, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm Mousasi's one of those guys. You go look back at the King Mo fight. It's like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
The guy's a better wrestler than me. He's going to hold me down. Let me up, King Mo.
Yeah.
Are you ready if I get up?
I think this is at the root of the conversation of what is winning a fight.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's a valid conversation. I think it's a conversation that I hope if people are watching this and one of their friends agrees with one and one agrees with the other that they have.
Oh, that Ramdean's an idiot.
Well, I'm the idiot in this one. For sure I'm the idiot in this one because people are like, that Rob, you know, it ain't about that. And it's like, but it can be about that. I 100% get what people are saying when they talk about he was the one wanting to finish the fight. He was the one coming forward. And until the day that you realize you beat a bull, the human beats the bull by making a miss till he's tired and then just getting one in him. And that's winning, too.
I think it also comes down to the interpretation of the rules. Chase has given us the rap. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about Ronda Rousey, and we're talking about that amazing fight card that happens in December in Las Vegas. Matter of fact, 3 fights on 3 different nights. More of everything in MMA when we come back for 5 rounds today. Welcome back to 5 Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black with you, discussing everything going on in the mixed martial arts landscape. We talked about Bellator Dynamite, which happens this coming Saturday in San Jose, California. The following week, September 26th, the UFC returns to the land of the rising sun for UFC Fight Night 75, the main event. And if you are a fight fan, this is the type of fight you got to tune in for, because it's kind of a freak show fight, but it's a freak show fight involving two highly skilled martial artist despite their appearance. Josh Barnett taking on Roy Big Country Nelson. And Derek, one of our camera guys, he said, Roy's got this all night long. And I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
I actually think that Barnett's going to brutalize this guy.
That's – you point a gun at me and say, pick a winner right now. I'm picking Barnett. But if Monday morning we came in here and Derek's strutting around like he knows what's up and we're stupid, which we are sometimes. Everybody is. That's a big thing about fighting. It's very important. If you are really into fighting and you're looking at people, whether they're Dominic Cruz, who has been the bantamweight champion of the world, an amazing analyst on television, or some guy on the internet, if somebody starts telling you that they're the expert of the experts, they're not. Really, because the most important thing you learn, the more you learn about fighting, is how little you know about fighting. And that's true of almost anything.
That's why I hate the predictions. People were asked by our producers to give predictions. Yeah. And I'm not a fan of it because it's like, okay, well, I can't remember where I put my crystal ball.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I have, there's no way it could. I talked to Jens Pulver one time and he told me, he goes, I just wish there's times where you wake up on Wednesday, the day before the fight, and you wake up and you think, that is the greatest sleep I have ever had. Why the can't the fight be today? I feel like a million dollars. I will smash through anybody today.
Amazing.
Let's just hope when I wake up on Saturday, I have that same feeling. But not everybody gets it. It's like, oh, I had the worst sleep last night. I got all these, I got wife issues, this and that. And those are all real things, that can affect you. Look at Jake Shields. Did he ever look as bad as he did in that Ellenberger fight throughout his career? No. What happened? His dad just died.
Yeah.
That's just, these are real things that happen.
It's true. And what we see our job as, and we see the job of people that do similar to us, is to go in and find ways to enrich the viewing experience. Yeah. You can do that by pointing out physical tools that guys have. Physical matchups, technical matchups, those are real. You can learn to, you know, you turn on Faraz's breakdown, or you look at somebody's written analysis of stuff. Those are facts.
Yeah.
But sometimes a guy just loses focus for a second. Roy Nelson hits you, that's the end of the fight. And so that's why this one so cool, because Roy Nelson shuts guys off, and that one variable alone, sometimes all that means is a guy needs to lose 2 seconds of focus. Mm-hmm. Josh Barnett, he's not that guy. Focus is his thing. When Josh, the genius of Josh Barnett, both as a fan and as an analyst, and if other fighters, why they love him, is he would literally tell you, I'm going to go in, I'm going to throw a hard overhand right to get to your hips, I'm going to push you up against the fence, I'm going to smash you for a bit till I get you down on the ground. From half guard, I'm going to elbow your face twice, get to mount, I'm going to soften you up until you give me the head and arm choke or your back, and I'm going to pound you out, and you go, I can't believe he said that. Well, he's probably going to do something else. And he
will
do
go
exactly that. And that is amazing. That's mind-blowing, because this isn't him doing it to me.
Mm-hmm.
This is him doing it to an elite athlete who is trained to stop him from doing that. And the fact that he can do that, that's barely human.
I know.
You know, and now Roy Nelson, he can be unprepared, because Josh Barnett might have, this is just a possibility, over those last couple of years been like, I enjoyed commentating wrestling, I've enjoyed
driving my fast cars,
doing Metamorphosis, I've been going to heavy metal concerts. Roy Nelson's not that tough a fight. You know, besides, I just want to make a couple hundred grand a few more times. I doubt he's in that mindset.
I don't think he is.
But if for some reason he was,
that's the slipping
and
Roy
Nelson just lines that one up, and he's like, ah, damn, I'm over this fighting thing anyways. Do I think that's likely? I do not.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
but that's a reality.
That's a reality.
That is a reality.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you talk about predictions, I get predictions on TV because not everybody gives a shit to the same level.
Yeah, I know.
Some people are like, I like NASCAR a lot, and I love country music, and sometimes I watch fighting. Oh, what's John Pollock? Oh, John Pollock's picking that? I hate that John Pollock. Oh, that Robin Black?
Yeah.
He thinks this. Last time he thought Pettis was going to win, and look what happened
to him.
You know, maybe they care. Maybe
it's
a tool for television.
I'll tell you why.
If our job is to enrich your experience, these are some ways you can do it.
I know. It's true. I was over at the grocery store, and one of the guys that works there, Nick, good dude, big Fight Network supporter, was talking about the predictions and how he loves the predictions. Mm. And he's like, I couldn't believe that you were the only guy that picked Glover Teixeira in that fight. And I was like, okay, well, I don't really like picking. He goes, no, this is key. You got to keep picking. And people just have a different angle, and they have a different appreciation, and they want certain things. So he opened my eyes to the fact that it's like, okay, just don't bet on our predictions.
Don't
They're
bet.
Like, we have no idea what the hell we're talking about in that department because, yes, sure, when you go based on facts, what past performances, like Cain Velasquez. Yeah. And it's like, oh, there's no way Cain Velasquez is going to look as good. We've never seen Cain Velasquez look as tired as he did in that Fabrizio Verdum fight. So based on history, that's why it seems very different than every other performance.
And if he did, now this is why you shouldn't bet, because you're like, nah, he's got it next time.
Yeah, right.
What if he looked the same? That's his new normal, whether it's his mental commitment or there was, again, a PED-related thing.
Sure.
We're not saying that. In fact, he's
you
hear those guys are pretty clean, always have. Everybody's going to be clean soon, so don't worry about that. But whatever the issue was, this is his new normal. I don't think that's Cain Velasquez's new normal. But
it could
if
be.
You bet that it was, that it wasn't, and it turns out it is, betting on fighting, betting on anything is about the enjoyment of the risk.
Oh, yeah.
And I get that.
But I see, I get that too, but I also see how it can ruin people's enjoyment of the game. Somebody's like, oh, God, they don't even want to watch
Game
this
doesn't
stream.
Even watch the fight.
Gets
and
all
Cody and
Paul
and Shaughnessy, who are betting guys, and they're check out Bookie Beatdown. They do a great job. And they use a lot of past performance. Well, this guy beat this guy by submissions. He's never submitted a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's as good a value as any.
That's
if
what,
the only job is to predict the winner, then maybe that's as good information as any. But it's so unknown that unless you just love the risk and like and the winning is worth it and losing isn't that bad for you, then I get it. So, if we're learning anything by talking this out and sharing whatever we find with people, we're learning that people enjoy things differently.
Yeah.
And just because I'm like, I so desperately want everybody to see that Demetrius Johnson is a special martial artist, some of them don't care. They want to say, they want to cheer against him because the other guy's funnier. And that's cool, man.
Well, you're right. You've changed my mind. So all the people out there, put everything on Josh Barnett, your mortgage, everything, all your assets. Bet the bank on Josh Barnett. He's going to beat Roy Nelson. Speaking of Josh Barnett, comes from that catch wrestling background, spent time training with judo Gene LaBelle. And, of course, Gene LaBelle has been a mentor to one rowdy Ronda Rousey, who's going to be taking on Holly Holm, undefeated, 9-0. Ronda Rousey is 12-0. I'm sure we're going to talk more about this fight in the next segment, but I know we all anticipate that Ronda Rousey is going to beat Holly Holm. Is she going to dismantle Holly Holm, or is Holly Holm going to impress people to the point where I get out of the first round? Yeah, Ronda won 10-9, and I get out of the second round. Ronda won 10-9.
A little worse, maybe.
A little worse.
Maybe. I mean, at least she has a plan. Like, at least she has a plan, which is different than everybody except for Misha Tate the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also why Misha Tate the third time, for me, was a fight that was a challenge.
Yep.
Because first thing that happens when you fight Ronda Rousey, holy shit, I'm fighting Ronda Rousey. Heart gets out, you go running at her like Cassandra. Like, what are you thinking? That's Ronda Rousey. Like, circle or
okay, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're talking about Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm.
Yeah.
It's going down in a stadium in Australia, co-featured bout Joanna and Jacek taking on Valerie Letourneau, the Canadian, for the 115-pound championship. Some people believe the Cyborg should be on this card, and I agree with you. I agree with not you, them that said it. Anyways, more of Five Rounds today when we return. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. John Ramteen and Robin Black with you. We're discussing UFC 193. It goes down in Melbourne, Australia on November 15th. The main event, Ronda Rousey, Holly Holm, Joanna and Jacek, and Valerie Letourneau on the card. Mark Hunt and Bigfoot Silva in that rematch. Michael Bisping, Robert Whittaker.
It's another
solid show.
Yeah.
Solid show. But you would imagine, just with Ronda Rousey alone, like she transcends mixed martial arts. She, as you mentioned, you're down in Florida, and the only fighter that is brought up is Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, everybody knows who she is. I mean, she's on talk shows and Roadhouse, and I mean, she's
do you like that idea? Her in the because we're in a world where they have to revamp things. It seems that, which I don't understand, and I'm going to go off topic here. You look at the TV shows that are out right now, better than TV has ever been in the history of television. how come we can't say the same about movies? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, how come we can't say the same about fight presentation and coverage?
Yeah, I guess so.
Because the way to be great is to innovate. Is to innovate every week, week after week. Change it up. Make it better.
Right.
Look, be creative. Look for new ways. And in a lot of these things, movies go, well, let's do what we've always done and see if, oh, people like these three things? Let's give them a movie with that and add explosions. In fighting, it's like, well, we put two people against each other in a poster. I don't know if people can see that. Probably not. But there's Cormier and Gustafson. They're standing like this, and it says UFC 192. Well, this is how you do it.
You're right.
Afterwards, people go, well, you know, what's next for the winner of this one? And let's play Joe Silva. What are we going to matchmake next? And, oh, well, he's a better – people do things exactly the same way until someone innovates.
Which is weird because –
weird.
Because if you – and hopefully we can bring these up. There's – if you go back and you look at that cool – I can't remember what the event was, but it was Randy Couture versus Minotauro. And it was a cool old school type carnival, two bare-knuckle boxing type guys. And I don't know if you can bring that – ever find that, Chase, for doing this. And same with the old Pride posters. They really were completely different than just Cormier versus Gustafson. There was creativity there. There's the one Pride poster where it's the top of the mountain. And all you can see is somebody's fingers reaching the top of the mountain.
Brilliant. And you got to innovate. But sometimes in society, you have to roll them over so quick, you just do the same thing. Same show every week, same things, same topics interchange, same photos. And so, but you're right. TV has never been more innovative. It had to be to survive. Why would it? We live in a choice culture, and this is roundabout getting back to Rousey. We live in a choice culture. Why are you going to tune in and see fighter A versus fighter B? Well, that Ronda Rousey, man, I mean, she'd beat Floyd Mayweather. She's in Roadhouse. It draws people back in.
I'm still going to see Roadhouse.
Yeah, me too.
Because I loved Roadhouse, and Ronda Rousey's awesome.
But once Ronda's in that and has drawn those people, it's now the UFC's chance. They're doing it with McGregor in Vegas on that crazy card, and they're doing it with Ronda down there. Draw these people in and then give them brilliant fights. Give them all of the best of everything. The thing about this fight that is interesting for me is that, like we said before the break, Holly Holm at least has a plan. That plan involves the fact that Ronda's only weak moment in even the short fights that we've seen is the fact that her ferocity and desire to get to you leaves her in her entry sometimes just reaching in, even in chin up. It's only a second. No one's taking advantage of it. To the point that even her own coaches noticed it, because when she fought against Betch Correa, she said after the plan was to strike with her until she initiated the clinch. So even they understand that in the moment of Ronda seeking the judo clinch, that's when Chuck Liddell would rip somebody. Chuck made you wrestle, think you were in a wrestling match, and he punched you in the face. So if you could do that to Ronda in the millisecond that she's entering, you can hurt her. How do you reproduce that? You make her have to enter and enter again. How do you do that? You move your feet. You move your feet a lot. And when you look at the two fights Holly Holm has had in the UFC, people are like, oh, she didn't look that good. She wasn't fighting those girls. She was rehearsing fighting Ronda.
Dress rehearsal.
They were dress rehearsal. She knew she'd win the fight, so they were dress rehearsals for Ronda Rousey. And Rousey's brilliant. Her mind is way underappreciated, and her coaching staff has proven to be very smart. Mm-hmm. They know that's the plan, so they have to adapt. Right. How are they going to cut her off? And because if they can't, for whatever reason, Holmes' kicks are great. She can do them at range.
But are they enough to hurt Ronda? That's the thing. It's like you look at those. Where can Ronda be hurt? Sure, in this area, but can Holly Holm hurt her? Ronda Rousey is used, spent her entire life being thrown on her shoulders and on her back and on her head. Yeah. She is used to being hurt. Like, you look at judo, I don't know too many judo guys that have come out of judo unscathed. Yeah. They all have some sort of crazy injury.
And they can take it, and she can too. And here's the problem. Short of getting that perfect moment, that in a fight that rarely happens, and you sure as hell can't bank on it, where Holm happens to land something on a button that everyone has, short of that, she would literally have to do this almost perfect for 25 minutes. And that's very unlikely. Yeah. But at least she has a plan. At least she has a workable strategy, which is a hell of a lot more than everybody else has had. So I think Sarah Kaufman came in with that plan and was overwhelmed.
Yeah, right.
And I think, you know, people at least have understood it. At least she's had a few dress rehearsals, and at least she's a champion. Mm-hmm. She's had championship-level fights. She's fought in front of big crowds. So there are certain things about her would you bank that? Would you, what did you say, liquidate your assets?
Yeah.
Would you do that with her? No. No, you shouldn't.
Well, and if I pulled up the crystal ball right now, I said, okay, November 16th, Ronda Rousey, TKO victory, Holly Holm, round one, 2 minutes in. Are you surprised?
No.
Absolutely
I'm not.
That's what. Chase
if,
has given us a sign.
If it was round three,
yeah.
I'm also not surprised.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think Holm can make something happen.
I hear what you're saying. When we come back, we're talking about the shows in Vegas at the end of the year. Three events and the big one, Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo for the undisputed 145-pound championship when we come back. Final segment here on Five Rounds Today. Coming up, UFC 194 takes place December 12th at the MGM in Las Vegas. They're hoping that this is the time. Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor was supposed to happen. I was in Vegas in July. Chad Mendes stepping in for the injured Jose Aldo. But man, it's not just about that. It's kind of the same thing. You look at that as the main event, Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo, and we had Robbie Lawler versus Rory McDonald, which was sensational. And instead, now we have Chris Weidman versus Luke Rockhold. Kind of the same thing.
I never made that connection, but that they were on the same co-main spot.
Yeah.
But I've been talking about it in the same way, referencing that fight, because it feels like, I mean, you've got a champion that is unbeatable, and you've got a challenger
the two
who
best,
refuses to be
literally
beaten.
The two best guys in the division.
Yeah. At a time that it's never been better.
Yeah, it's just remarkable. And Luke Rockhold, he's very, very confident right now. He goes, I'm not taking anything away from Chris Weidman, but I am going to dismantle this guy. I love his confidence because, A, you know that Chris is confident. Chris is confident because, A, I'm the man.
Yeah.
I beat Anderson Silva twice. I beat Lyoto Machida.
Yeah.
I stopped Vitor the Cheetor.
Yeah.
I'm the man.
Yeah.
Luke Rockhold is different than those guys. You say that now people have figured out Lyoto Machida. Chris Weidman kind of showed Luke Rockhold how to defeat Lyoto Machida. Anderson Silva, some fighters, they get past their expiration date, so to speak. And Anderson Silva, he could be there.
Maybe.
You know, maybe he can contend with guys in the top five to top 10. But
he
I don't know if he can beat these guys.
Not at 40.
Exactly, not at 40. So when you think about this matchup, where are the areas that Luke Rockhold can take advantage and hurt Chris Weidman?
It's interesting for a billion reasons.
And we only have a minute.
And we have a minute. Well, Rockhold has been limiting his menu for the last few years. And maybe, what if he's doing it in a way.
Open it up.
Yeah. Doing it in a way where you forget, oh, we better deal with his right hook that he draws you in and comes over the top. We better deal with his left body kick. We better deal with his search of the knockdown and never the takedown. We have to deal with all these things. And then all of a sudden he's like, well, 5 years ago I was doing double kicks. I was doing turning kicks. I was faking my hip to length. He's got a whole arsenal of stuff he hasn't used in a long time. So does Weidman and his coach prepare for those things, or do they deal with what they think is coming, or do they say, I don't care what he does, we're going to break him? If that happens, they're both mentally unbreakable, like Rory. Rory had to be physically
awesome.
Done. And these two are the same way. I said this on Five Rounds. I'm scared to watch this.
Yeah,
fight.
I'm not scared. I am thrilled to death. However, we got to wrap things up here. Next week, we're taking a closer look at the Fight Night card that's happening in Japan. Josh Barnett, Roy Nelson, on behalf of Robin Black and our producer, Chase Kaiser. I'm John Ramney. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.